to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast as always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show this week. And guys, I'm really hoping that this program is going to go a lot smoother than it did last week, because it was really weird. I've been doing podcasting now since 2013, and since then I've done hundreds and hundreds of episodes. I mean, this is, I think about, we're closing in on 150 for this podcast. Anyhow, I've never had a single glitch in a recording session in all those years and in all those different podcast episodes I've recorded. But last week was a first. I got about halfway through the amount of material I wanted to cover, and then all of a sudden my software just froze, the recording software that I use. And I know there's different ways to do it, and some people recommend that you have a digital audio recorder and just record into that. I won't get into the nitty-gritty. Anyhow, it was really weird. I think my computer was downloading and installing an update for Windows, and there was some sort of conflict, but it was weird, because it was also frustrating, because I also do the show usually quite late at night. Well, not late at night, but it's certainly at the end of a long day for me. So having to start over after getting more than 50% in was a bit challenging. But hey, this week there is something to celebrate. There is something to talk about. And that is, of course, the crowning of Lewis Hamilton as world champion after coming home second at the U.S. Grand Prix last weekend in Austin, Texas. Lewis, of course, has basically been a shoo-in for the title for months. His lead at the top of the world championship was unassailable. And of course, there were always mathematical ways that Valtteri Bottas could catch up and beat Lewis, but it was pretty unrealistic. I mean, the odds for all of those things to happen, and Valtteri to maximize and win all the races that he needed to, and Lewis not to score any points, was astronomic at best. But still, congratulations to Lewis for winning it. And I guess there was a bit of a challenge at the end, albeit however small. But it is an amazing achievement. I still think, even as recently as the beginning of the 2018 World Championship, and just thinking then, well, it's most likely going to go down between Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel for the for world champion, and one of them will become a five-time world champion by the end of 2018, of course. And this, here we are, a year later, and now not only is Sebastian still a four-time world champion, all of a sudden Lewis Hamilton is a six-time world champion. I can't wrap my head around it. It's just to use Lewis's words, a bit surreal, and it is really a phenomenal achievement. Of course, he is the best driver and the best car with the best team, and that, of course, has a lot to do with it. But still, nonetheless, I mean, it's not that he goes out there and walks it every single weekend. Still has to work. It still has to put in the effort, and it's an extremely impressive achievement when you think about it. And if you go around now and you look, of course, the next benchmark that he has to aim for is to tie Michael Schumacher's record, seven world championships, and that really is the gold standard. And I really came of age as the time when Michael was just breaking into Formula One, and during his time, especially as the Ferrari years, is where he really made a name for himself and won a whole pile of world championships for the Scuderia. But if you look now, you compare them head to head. Of course, Michael has one more world championship than Lewis. But just head to head on some of the key statistics. Michael, 68 pole positions. Lewis, 87. Miles ahead in that category. Michael has led 142 races. Lewis, 145. Michael has won 91 Grand Prix. Lewis, 83. Michael, 155 podiums. And Lewis, 150. So he's already catching up or surpassed Michael Schumacher in so many categories. And obviously the next one will be the podiums next year. You have to think that Lewis Hamilton is going to get on the podium at least five times in 2020. I mean, it's inconceivable to see otherwise. I mean, eight wins next year to tie Michael Schumacher. It's possible. It's a big number to aim for, but we've seen Lewis win a lot of races in a year, so that's another one that could conceivably tumble as well. And then if things go his way, then of course he could become a seven-time world champion. So, I mean, it really is phenomenal because I didn't think after Michael Schumacher left Ferrari, and of course he had a comeback with a couple of years at Mercedes before finally hanging up his helmet for good and going into retirement, but I really thought that we would never see that equaled. And of course now looking back at it, hindsight is 20/20, but still, when you see the amount of work and dominance that goes into a driver winning just a championship, let alone multiple championships, it really is quite phenomenal. But I mean, if you look now at Lewis's career in general, I mean, it seems like a very, very long time ago since he won his very first race at the 2007 Canadian Grand Prix, but it really has been a wonderful career that he's had so far. I mean, he's only raced for two teams coming into F1 with McLaren way back in 2007, and then switching to Mercedes in 2013, of course winning his first world championship when he was with Mercedes, and of course that was that phenomenal and exciting finale at Brazil in 2008, just managing to sneak it away from Felipe Massa. But I mean, his first season, finished second of the world championship, first in 2008. And then in the following four seasons from McLaren from 2009 to 2012, never finished higher than fourth in the world championship. And then, since he switched to Mercedes in 2013, he did finish that first year. He finished fourth in the world championship his first year with Mercedes. But since then, since 2014, he hasn't finished lower than second in the world championship. And that is, of course, the one time he didn't finish or first and win the world championship was just a couple of years ago in 2016 when he finished runner-up to his teammate Nico Rosberg. But five out of the last six world championships won by Lewis Hamilton, really quite phenomenal. But the amount of points that that he's racked up is really quite astounding. Last year, he finished the season with 408 points, and right now, as of we still have two races to go, he's already on 381 points. So conceivably, I mean, if he wins a couple more races, he could catch up and pass that. But I mean, yeah, when he won the championship in 2017, 363 points, and when he lost to Nico Rosberg, 380, won it in 2015 and in 2014, 384 and 381 points. I mean, he's racked up some serious amount of points over the years. I mean, and you just look at the amount of wins that he's had for Mercedes. 11 wins in 2014, 2015, 10 wins, same again in 2016, 9 wins 2017, 11 wins in 2018. So that's why, I mean, it is conceivable. I mean, then who's to suggest otherwise that Mercedes is not going to build another extremely good car? It just has to be assumed at this point that what they are going to do and what they're going to deliver and give Lewis Hamilton for next year and Valtteri Bottas is going to be another championship contender. So it really is. I think that conversation needs to be had where he fits into the great drivers of Formula One. But and it's usually a conversation that I don't like about having an athlete in any sports, while one athlete or driver in this case is active and another one is retired and it's different eras and all those sorts of things. But I think in this case, I think it is a good time to have that discussion. And, it really is fantastic because especially when you watch Lewis Hamilton, I mean, he is still, I think, over the course of a single lap, one of the fastest drivers in Formula One. He is just able to nail these brilliant laps one after another whenever he needs to speed it up for a pit stop to achieve the undercut or the overcut or just in qualifying. It really is absolutely mind-boggling how he can do it. I mean, he's still fairly young. I mean, Lewis is only 34 years old. And if you look at Kimi Raikkonen, 6 years older, I mean, he's got one more a year left before he retires, and he'll be 41 at the time. So, I mean, the question is how long does Lewis Hamilton still want to keep racing, and how long he wants to keep going for? Because obviously, with the way he's going, I mean, he's earned the right to walk away and retire when he wants and on his own terms. And I've always wondered, what would Lewis do later in his career? Would he want to go to another team like Ferrari and try that that challenge and see if he can win a world championship for Ferrari as well? And at this point, I can't really see it happening. I know that it would be a dream for a lot of drivers to win or drive for Ferrari, win a world championship there. But honestly, for me now, Lewis is... he's synonymous with Mercedes. He seems to me to be the quintessential Mercedes drivers. There's certain guys that you always think belong with a certain team. I mean, when you think of Mika Hakkinen and Ayrton Senna, you always think that they drove for McLaren at obviously at different times. And when I think about Fernando Alonso, I think of the first one that pops into my mind is Renault when he won his two world championships there in 2005 and 2006. And it would be really, really weird. And, you know, every once in a while when you pop online, you'll see pictures that that people Photoshop. And I've seen ones of Lewis wearing scarlet red Ferrari overalls. I've seen Sebastian Vettel wearing the silver Mercedes overalls and things like that. But I would really have a hard time really imagining that that could really happen. But who knows? Who knows? Who could... blame him for wanting to try a different challenge, but at the same time, I couldn't really see it happening. Anyways, I just wanted to take a quick break here just to talk about Vivid Seats, because we have action in the NFL, NBA, NHL, and so many wonderful sporting events and all other events going on at this time of year. It really is one of the best times of the entire year. And if you don't want to miss the game or the event of your choice, make sure you have your seats for the game, and you can get that at Vivid Seats. They are the top source for tickets for the events that you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, and you can do this all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back, and that is Vivid Seats Reward. So go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Reward loyalty program. Now, every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee, from the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more. Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. And finally, when it's time to buy, new users can enter the promo code OVERTIME at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. So make sure you go and check that out. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit more about the U.S. Grand Prix last weekend. And I know it's a completely, I guess, a moot point at this time now. But we do have two races left. And of course, there isn't anything left to race for but pride. There are some points left on the table. But just for the sake of it, let's just review the standings in both the Drivers and Constructors Championships. Mercedes, 695 points. Ferrari, 479. Red Bull, Honda, 366. McLaren, Renault, 121. Renault, 83. And then rounding out to the bottom five in the Constructors Championship, Racing Point, Toro Rosso, Alfa Romeo, Haas, and Williams, with the one sad single lonely point rounding out the 10th and last team in the Constructors World Championship. On the driver's side, of course, as we were talking about before the break, Lewis Hamilton crowned world champ this past weekend. 381 points for Lewis. That's, well, miles ahead of his teammate Valtteri Bottas. Second in the championship, 314. Charles Leclerc, 249 points. Max Verstappen, 235. Sebastian Vettel, 230. And then a long way back to the very impressive Alexander Albon in the second Red Bull. He's got 84 points. That is 4 points ahead of Carlos Sainz, who is seventh in the first of the McLarens. Pierre Gasly and Danny Ricciardo. Sergio Perez in the first of the Racing Points rounds out the top 10. And then the bottom 10 drivers in the World Championship: Lando Norris, Nico Hülkenberg, Danny Kvyat, Kimi Raikkonen, Lance Stroll, Kevin Magnussen, Roman Grosjean, Antonio Giovinazzi, Robert Kubica, and George Russell. And George Russell, the rookie for Williams, the only driver not to have scored a single point in the World Championship this season. He has two races left to try and change that around, but yeah, we know how hard of a season and a long year it has been for Williams thus far. Anyway, so just going over the top 10 of the race classification at the U.S. Grand Prix at the Circuit of the Americas past weekend. Race winner Valtteri Bottas passing his teammate Lewis Hamilton just a couple laps before the end. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull rounding out the podium. Charles Leclerc miles behind. Ferrari completely off the pace this past weekend. Alexander Albon, Danny Ricciardo, Lando Norris, Norris coming home in the first of the two McLarens, 7th and 8th for them, with Carlos Sainz coming in 8th behind his teammate Nico Hülkenberg and Sergio Perez, rounding out the top 10. Bottom 10 was Kimi Raikkonen, Danny Kvyat, Lance Stroll, Antonio Giovinazzi, Roman Grosjean, Pierre Gasly, George Russell finished, well, he was there 2 laps behind Pierre Gasly, ended up with a DNF, and a couple other drivers that didn't finish the race was K-Mag with an exploding brake disc, Robert Kubica, who really noticed him going out of the race. I certainly didn't at the time. And of course, the other driver not to be classified was poor old Sebastian Vettel, who retired after only 7 laps after quite a spectacular suspension failure, and his tough season has obviously continued. But the big news of the weekend, of course, was Lewis Hamilton winning the world championship. But there were plenty of other stories going on, and he did seal the title despite losing to Bottas. And again, it was a bit of a interesting difference between the strategies employed by the different teams, and also the just within Mercedes themselves this weekend. Hamilton's gamble didn't pay off, and just didn't have the pace to fend off his teammate late in the race, and certainly had to his work cut out for himself to stay in front of Max Verstappen. And I looked at it at the time, even though Max was going a little bit faster, you could tell that he was going to get up right close before Lewis at the end of the race, and I did remark at the time that if Max wants to get close and pass Lewis, if Lewis's tires are failing that badly, he needs probably about 2 or 3 laps extra, and that's exactly what it was. But it was interesting just how it all turned out, and it was another weekend, I think, that was interesting just to watching the qualifying, because even though Sebastian Vettel started that race second behind Valtteri Bottas, you know, I think he was only about 1/100 of a second behind him, so fairly close for pace in the race itself, Ferrari just had no pace even right from the start. We're going to talk about this in a minute, because there's a lot of different theories out there as to why they were so slow, and a lot of that speculation has to go with this technical directive that was issued by the FIA this past week regarding engines, and a lot of Ferrari's rivals wanted clarification on on the issue, and just the way that they were circumventing, or there was speculation that they were doing things with the fuel flow and doing maybe some things that were a bit of a gray area, and the fact that they were so much slower was due to the fact that the advantage, the fact that they were playing this gray area or this loophole in the rules, has now been closed. And I'm getting ahead of myself. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute, but it was interesting nonetheless to see how much of a performance deficit that they did have. But anyways, just talking about race winner Valtteri Bottas, he said that it felt good to deny his teammate Lewis Hamilton the chance to win the Formula One title with a win at the U.S. Grand Prix. And I think that that Bottas well and truly deserved that race win, which I believe was his 7th career victory. Anyways, it has been an interesting year, and I really thought that even though that Bottas has managed to win several races this year, which is much better than it was last year. I mean, 2018 was really rough for him. It never really seemed like he got into a groove last year, and he suffered because of that. But this year, I mean, he really came out in Australia at the very first race of the year, way back in March, which seems like an eternity ago now. But I thought it was very impressive just the way that he came out, because he was quicker than everyone that race. He was quicker than his teammate, quicker than the Red Bull. And that was another one of those races where Ferrari struggled, because Bottas was well ahead of his teammate Lewis Hamilton, who came second. Max Verstappen, who was quicker than the Ferraris, came home third. And then Sebastian Vettel was fourth. And then Charles Leclerc, his teammate, making his debut for the team, ordered to by the team to hold station and hold fifth. And that really sort of set, I think, the tone. I mean, now looking back at it, I know we have the benefit of almost 20 additional races since then to see how the season has unfolded, and where Mercedes has excelled and been stronger than Ferrari, and how Ferrari pulled some races back after the summer break. But still, I mean, it was those early races of the year that Mercedes really did pull away and establish their strangle, what was going to become a stranglehold on the season. It was something that they were really never going going to look back from. And well, I mean, Bottas did put, like I say, put in that that early challenge by winning the first race of the season. But once Lewis got into his got into the groove of things and started winning himself, then it really was. Well, it was almost, I would say, settled, but it was really going to be, it was going to be Lewis's title to lose. I mean, because Bottas won, well, they did win two races each out of the first four, and that went up to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, because Valtteri won first in Australia, then Lewis followed it up with a pair of wins in Bahrain and China. Bottas answered back and won in Azerbaijan, which, of course, was snatched out of his hands last year. And then Lewis went on a bit of a tear, won four races in a row in Spain, Monaco, Canada, and France. Max Verstappen and then managed to sneak in between there, won a race in Austria, which that was a surprising one for me, because Mercedes had been so good through those first eight races of the year, and that's where they really ran away with it and really put their stranglehold on there. Was they were just so much better than their rivals at that point in the season. That's why I think that Austria was a bit of an outlier for me, I think, for a lot of people, because Mercedes just weren't as quick as they usually were, and Max was just not to be denied. I mean, Charles Leclerc, he looked like he was going to be the favorite to win that one. He was leading the race, qualified on pole position, and since then, I mean, Lewis, it was harder for him to work for. I mean, he won in Britain, like it seems like he does every year. Then Max won that really bizarre wet German Grand Prix. And then Lewis has managed to win only three races since then. I mean, I know that three races isn't really... It's not a small achievement, but considering how well they had been doing early in the year, you did have a number of races that were won by Charles Leclerc and the Sebastian Vettel. They won the three races after the summer break. But since then, Russia, Japan, Mexico, USA, again, it's been going back and forth between Valtteri Bottas and Lewis Hamilton. And Valtteri, I mean, all credit to him. Four race victories this year. He's had five pole positions. And I think it's been a very, very good season for him. And two fastest laps recorded both at the Australian Grand Prix and then at in Montreal, the Canadian Grand Prix back in June. So there's still more to be put on this season, but you can understand why Valtteri Bottas would feel a little bit of satisfaction to have snuck that victory away from Lewis Hamilton. I mean, it does work out in the bigger picture, because I was wondering what was going to happen. Was Lewis going to pull over and make it easy or let him pass? But they did fight for it a little bit, but in the end, Bottas's tires were better than Lewis's, and it was a bit of an easy pass. Anyways, after we look at that, this was an interesting one, and I think what surprised me about this is, having been around elite athletes, having interviewed them and spoken with them many, many times over the years, I always find, regardless what the sport, and it doesn't really seem to be too much of a difference between men and women, you know, these high-level athletes all seem to have the same mentality, and at least publicly, they don't often admit to... having too many shortcomings or doubts or anything like that. But Lewis Hamilton admits that he had to battle what he called demons, a very emotionally draining season. And well, I mean, obviously there were two very, very dark spots. One was the untimely death at Spa of Antoine Hubert, the Formula 2 driver, and then also Niki Lauda, that was a great friend and mentor of Lewis Hamilton. So you can imagine that that would be difficult for anyone, but especially for Lewis. I mean, Niki was like I say, a friend and a mentor to him, and he did have to say that it was one of his hardest years, and it was an emotional roller coaster. And so Lewis did have to say about this, and I quote, "Trying to remain focused throughout the year, that is the toughest, and the only really other athletes who are at the top of the game can probably relate to it. It's just arrive week in, week out, can't drop the ball like I did in qualifying in the US, for example, and for being able to bounce back from the lower days." It has not been easy for us. We started the season, honestly, going off to Melbourne, thinking that we were going to be behind. It has been a real challenge. The second half of the season has been the toughest second half of the season I think we've had as a team, fighting against Ferrari and Red Bull. Every year you go through a different roller coaster ride of emotions to get to where you're going. Each and every single one of us is struggling with something in life, whatever it may be, small, big. I try to show people that from the outside, things always look great, but it's not always the case. I'm also struggling with lots of different things and battling certain demons and trying to make sure I'm constantly growing as a person. Yeah, you can understand. And I mean, from the professional side, maybe like he says, other athletes that are at top of the game to take his words might be able to relate what he's going through. But I think we can all relate to a certain extent that when we go through the ups and downs in our lives and the challenges that we face, that it's not always easy to get out of bed and to show up to work or to school or whatever it is that you need to do during the day. That even though that we have these struggles that we face, that we still have a life to live, we still have a living to make, and sometimes you just have to get up, put on your game face, and go out there and do your best. I mean, when you're in the an elite athlete like Lewis Hamilton, and you're fighting in the world championship, and there's so much on the line, the pressure just must be absolutely enormous. But I do find it an interesting admission from him that just to say that the second half of the season has been more difficult. And of course that would be true. I mean, Nicky passing away during the middle of the year, and that second half, I mean, we have seen a stronger Ferrari, we have seen a stronger Red Bull, and the German Grand Prix was a different one because it was wet and everybody got caught out. I mean, Lewis got caught out. Leclerc was caught out by it. Bottas was caught out. So even Max had a bit of a moment on the wet track there, but managed to keep it together and not go off and put into one of the tire barriers like so many other guys did that day. I always find the mindset of some of these elite athletes very interesting, and I thought it was an interesting look behind the curtain from Lewis Hamilton. All right, moving along, let's talk now about Ferrari, and I mentioned this briefly just now, and they did sort of kind of explain things. It's interesting, it just appears, depends where you look or who you listen to talking it about it, because they were saying after the race that they were very insistent that their lack of straight line speed at Austin was nothing to do with their engine, and of course there were a lot of things that were said, most I guess notably by Max Verstappen, who basically said that they were cheating. Anyways, Ferrari were quite adamant that they did nothing. They made no changes to their power units, and basically the lack of speed that they had was how they approached their downforce levels. So they have run with lower wing settings compared to a lot of their rivals all season long to boost its speed on the straights, but that's been at the expense of the corner and the grip during the corners, and that's where Red Bull and Mercedes have really had the edge compared to Ferrari all season long. But, it's funny because, you see that, and then, you go and look around, and then you hear Charles Leclerc talking. And, first of all, I think it was interesting what Verstappen said, because when he was asked about the advantage that Ferrari had, and then they were slower at Austin, and then he said, and I quote, this is Max Verstappen, and he said, that's what happens, we stop cheating, of course, but yeah, they had a good look at it, so now we have to keep close on it, of course. So that's interesting because basically what this directive that was issued by the FIA earlier that week was that in this technical directive that it basically outlawed what was a clever way of increasing the fuel flow. So Leclerc, and just sort of building on that previous statement that I was just talking about, Ferrari saying that they made no changes to their power unit, and Max saying that they were cheating. So Charles, and I love this because there's a bit of a rivalry brewing between these guys, both on and off the track. So anyways, Charles had this to say in response to Max Verstappen, and I quote, "I think it is a joke, to be completely honest. He has no clue. He is not in the team. We know exactly what we are doing. I don't know why he's speaking. He doesn't know anything anything about us. And that is really, really true. And but it is funny, and I think it's like I say, I think it's interesting the rivalry that is really brewing between these two guys, and we've seen it on the track. And I don't know what Max thinks he knows. He probably knows a lot more than we do, obviously. But it there are no shortage of critics after that last week and after that that directive was issued by the FIA, because Honda F1 technical director Toyoharu Tanabe says that is clear that Ferrari had a reduced speed advantage at the US Grand Prix, but he really didn't go as far to be completely specific. So Tanabe said, and I quote, "We cannot separate the chassis drag and the engine performance. When we look at only speed, the gap between Ferrari and ours is closer than in previous races. That is clear, but we don't know if it came from only the engine or the chassis. Their race pace was not as strong as previous races. It means the package was different or not sufficient for this track. I don't know, but we see the difference in the top speed." So that is, that is very, very, I think that's a good statement. I think that's very concise. I mean, he is noting that there was a reduction in the straight line speed of the Ferrari, but unlike Max, who was quite blunt in his assessment of what the issue was, and that was obviously that he felt they were cheating with the fuel flow and working around the regulations, whereas Tanabe was a little bit more non-committal and just basically saying, oh, it could be the engine, could be the aerodynamics, it could be any number of things, but the end result was that that they were slower. Now, so first of all, you have Ferrari saying that that it was that it was all to do with the downforce, but then a couple of days later afterwards, now they're saying that they're at a loss to explain why their pace was so bad at the US Grand Prix, and they really weren't any match for Mercedes or Red Bull. I mean, Bottas and Hamilton and Verstappen, they all finished within several seconds of each other. I think that Max finishing third was somewhere about 5 or 6 seconds off of the race lead by the time the race was over. Leclerc, miles behind. I think he was about 50, 55 seconds back. So that is, that's light years in Formula One terms. And especially for one of the big teams, that's really quite a massive deficit to be at compared to some of the teams that you're a rival to, especially the Ferrari has shown over the past number of races since the summer break how quick and how good they were. I mean, we look at Monza, how they were able to stay ahead on those the long straightaways and in Belgium as well, and other races since. And this past weekend, it looked like they'd gone completely off the boil. They were just not anywhere close to challenging anyone. I mean, they both looked terrible off of the line, and Vettel even admitted after he crashed out of the race with that suspension failure that it just took several laps to really get any heat into the tires and to get them working. And then it did look like he was getting a bit of pace. I mean, because he dropped back through the race order quite rapidly. I mean, he'd lost a place even by the first turn. He was passed by Ricciardo and other drivers after that, and by the time it looked like his tires had started working, there was sufficient grip and sufficient temperature in it. It was a bit of a moot point, because it wasn't too long after that the suspension on the right rear failed rather spectacularly. And I really wonder that and to be quite honest, I haven't had a chance to really look into it since the race, but I haven't really heard anybody else talk too much about what was the actual cause of the suspension failure. I mean, the one obvious speculation is just because of the horrible nature of the track there at the Circuit of the Americas, just how bumpy it was, and that really was surprising, because when I came in and started watching qualifying on Saturday, hadn't really had a chance to follow up on the practice sessions beforehand, but immediately they were talking about how the drivers were complaining about how bumpy the race track was and how unpleasant it was. I mean, Lewis Hamilton Hamilton was complaining of headaches after, I think it was on Saturday after qualifying. And I thought, oh yeah, well sure, you know, sometimes athletes tend to over-exaggerate things and maybe make a bit of a meal of it. But when I actually sat down to actually watch some of the highlights from practice and then watch qualifying, I was really quite surprised actually to like how bouncy and how much the guys were really being thrown around on the inside of the cockpits over some of those areas that really were very good in terms of the surface there. And I mean, so part of it, part of the fallout from that is that the track is actually going to close for the winter for extensive and also a bit of a Freudian slip, also probably expensive repairs. And that is in partly to do with the problem that they had for Formula One, but also these undulations and bumps in the track caused a lot of problems for the MotoGP riders when they were there back in April. Anyways, there was a couple of things that were said by Coda boss Bobby Epstein, and he told motorsport.com, quote, "The guys worked all last night and tonight they're doing it again out in the pit area. There's a massive grinder coming. It's not easy on our guys because all our staff work pretty hard for the weekend and they already have a lot of hours. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a big burden. We're actually closing the track for most of December and the half of January to fix the problems. We did some repairs last year before MotoGP, so I wouldn't say we'd have to do the whole thing. Certainly will involve the entire back straight, the pit out, and part of turn one. There's a part of a hump before turn nine, turns 18 and 19. So it's pretty extensive. I know what the bill is," end quote. So Epstein does hint at it. So my slip say that it was going to be closed for expensive repairs probably isn't too far off the mark. But it was an issue. And even Max Verstappen was saying that that he suffered floor damage that he felt was going to really hindered his chance to really put a bid in to try and win that race. But apparently the floor damage was picked up earlier in the race, and Christian Horner, the team boss for Red Bull, said, quote, "We had a pretty decent weekend, qualifying within a few hundredths of the pole, but we lost a big chunk of the rear floor quite early on in the race. We damaged the front wing end plate with a touch at the first turn, and then we have had some rear floor damage, which I don't know was the result of that or running wide at the first turn. But from about lap five onwards, we saw a drop in load and there's a big hole in the floor that is missing." So Verstappen also said that that his car was behaving in what he called a weir way, which I'd expect that a big hole in your floor would affect your car to quite a bit. And Max said, quote, "I was just struggling with some weird oversteer in the car. Initially, they said it was just my front wing, which had a bit of damage after the race. I looked at the car and I was missing a big piece of my floor in front of the rear tire. So that definitely cost me a lot of lap time today. I don't know when it happened, but already quite quickly into the race, I had this weird behavior from the car, which I had not felt before. So that's a bit unfortunate. Otherwise, I think we could have been stronger." And I think he probably could have been. I mean, he did very well to stay in touch with the Mercedes. And like I was saying earlier in the show, I think that if he had a couple more laps, he just might have been able to do a little bit more and might have been able to get a little bit closer I mean, he's already close enough to Lewis Hamilton. But I think that had he had a couple of laps more, he might have been able to make a move and pass Lewis Hamilton and maybe get second. I think at that point that the race was going to be Valtteri Bottas, as he was just too strong in those closing stages. But Max, I think, certainly was robbed of a second place. Anyways, I'd like to talk now about my bookie, or a sponsor again. They're back for this week. And like I was saying earlier, November is one of the great sports months of the year. Football, college hoops, NBA, NHL, golf, racing, anything. It's all out there, and MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. So if you're the kind of person who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you get a couple of the big favorites this week, the parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So, of course, there's props, futures, and in-game betting available too. NFL lines, NBA lines, NHL lines, NCAA sorry, NCAA hoops. That's a bit of a mouthful for me. They're all online. You can go check it out at mybookie.ag. And if you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway all the way up to $1,000. So that means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. So just use promo code OVERTIME to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code OVERTIME to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. So visit mybookie.ag today. And remember, at MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Okay, well, let's keep it going here. And just going back to Ferrari, and I was just saying a little bit earlier that it is a little bit weird that they did start saying, okay, well, this is the reason that we were so slow, and that was because of the downforce that settings that we had with the front wing. It wasn't anything with the power unit. But now that they are just at a loss to explain what's going on. And Matteo Binotto, the team principal at Ferrari, said when he was asked if he had an understanding or knew what was going on, he said, quote, not yet, end quote. Anyways, Charles went on to say, quote, on the first stint especially, I've got no explanation for that. Something really felt wrong, and we need to analyze and understand what was wrong with that. On the second and third stints, it was not as bad as the first one. We were still slower than on the first leaders, but not as much as the first stint. So I think we need to analyze what happened on the first stint. I had a lot of problems with the front and some of the corners, and it was pretty inconsistent all throughout the first run. But it comes, to be completely honest, I have no answers to tell you what was wrong. It just felt really, really poor grip. So that is interesting because, we were saying a little bit earlier that everybody else, a lot of Ferrari's rivals, are saying, oh, they're so slow because they were cheating with the engine, with the fuel flow, and now that the FIA has clarified the issue and closed the loophole around that they've had to make the changes, and that was the whole reason that they were slower. But if you hear the people within Ferrari themselves, earlier in the weekend, Charles was just critical of Max, saying, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not in the team. We've made no changes to the engine. But then we see Charles' reaction a day or so after the race. He's a little bit more specific. Again, he does say that it has something to do with the grip on the car, and just it was obvious. I think that was a lot of the problem. And whether or not that's just fake news, they're just not being completely forthcoming. They're trying to deflect or divert attention away from, that they have in fact made changes to the engine. They don't want anybody to know. They don't want to admit that they were doing naughty things. Of course, that's always a possibility. But just looking at how slow they were off the line, of course, they were both on the dirty side of the track. But they just were not up to it. And it'll be interesting to see what happens the last two races of the year in Brazil and Abu Dhabi, whether or not they can get it turned around, or if they've gone completely off the boil again. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit more about, well, let's, I'm going to jump ahead here. Let's talk about the torpedo, Danny Kvyat. So he's denied a point scoring finish again for a post-race penalty, and that's for the second straight race in a row. That happened in Mexico, had to happen again at the U.S. Grand Prix last weekend. And so this happened, or he was penalized because he made contact and pushed Sergio Perez in the racing point wide after getting inside of the sharp turn 15, and he was placed under investigation by the stewards for causing a collision, and there was assessed a 5-second penalty shortly after the checkered flag, which dropped the torpedo down to 12th place. So like I say, that happened a week earlier in Mexico as well. And it's kind of funny, I was just I was thinking when I was reading about that, when I'd heard that Kvyat had been given that penalty and then ended up in 12th place and ended up outside of the points, was that I show a guy a little bit of love on this program, that seems to be the kiss of death, because I'd I think we were talking about it either last week or the week before, just not so much about Kvyat, but just about the situation at Red Bull in general, how Alex Albon moved up to the big team, and Pierre Gasly had moved back down to Toro Rosso, and just and all of that, and why it seemed to be the logical driver, the four drivers that or Red Bull drivers have in Formula One, either in the big team or at Toro Rosso, that Kvyat was a known quantity, having raced, he's been in the system for a while, raced for Toro Rosso, raced for Red Bull, so it really made sense, at least from my point of view. to try Alex Albon in the big team for the second half of the year if they're going to make any changes, and he's done very well. But at the same time, when I was giving praise to Alexander Albon, I was also being quite complimentary of Danny Kvyat. I'd been saying that having that that year out away from Formula One last year as a race driver, at any rate, I know he was a reserve and simulator driver at Ferrari in 2018. That he seemed more focused, seemed a little bit more mature, seemed a little less torpedo-like this year. But Kvyat, I guess at the end of the day, he's Kvyat's just being Kvyat, and the torpedo reputation is well deserved, as it is. He's manifested his inner torpedo in the last couple of races. Anyways, Racing Point team principal Otmar Szafnauer says that Kvyat's penalty at the end of the race for his last lap contact with Sergio Perez was well deserved, and Racing Point said that quotes justice prevailed in that situation with Danny Kvyat. And talking about other drivers from the back of the pack, Haas, boy, have they ever had a bad year. I mean, really disappointed, really hoped to see better things from them this year, but again, nothing really to write home about. I mean, 20 points for Magnussen this year, 8 points for Grosjean in the championship, less than 30 points at this point, no pun intended, in the season, is really a poor showing for them. But his race, Kevin Magnussen's retirement on the very last or right towards the end of the lap, I think it was maybe 2-3 laps before the checkered flag waved, happened when his brake disc on the right front literally exploded, and as he was going into the corner, you could just see all the brake dust coming out, and he went into the gravel, and that was it. So disappointing for them. So let's just talk a little bit now about McLaren as we start to wind the show down a little bit now. This is a story that's been out there for a little bit, but it was I think this was a story that was originally reported by motorsport.com about a month ago, that they'd been McLaren that has been in discussion with Petrobras, which is the Brazilian fuel and oil company, and they've terminated their sponsorship deal with immediate effect. And that's the second time something like that's happened in Formula One this year. Earlier this year, it was Rich Energy terminating their sponsorship deal with Toro Rosso, because getting all these different energy drink manufacturers mixed up with Haas F1. And unlike Rich Energy and Haas, the Petrobras, whatever you want to call them, and McLaren was not quite as weird and a bit strange. I mean, that whole saga around the bizarreness of the Rich Energy and the Haas split was just it was just odd. Anyways, just sticking with McLaren now, they've admitted that their pit stops are not at the same level as some of the top teams, and that's true. I mean, it was really, I think, embarrassing for them in Mexico almost 2 weeks ago with that botched pit stop with Lando Norris. I mean, he was delayed, obviously, and retired because he was so far behind in that race. And it was unfortunate because they just weren't able to fasten one of the wheels on in his pit stop. And the wheel was completely loose. He gets down to the end of the pit lane, and the mechanics have to run down there, grab the car, push it back to his pit stop. And that was just embarrassing. But, I mean, you look at it. Quite often, if you look at the top teams and the teams that are doing it well, they seem to be nailing the pit stops in about 2.2, 2.3, anywhere up to about 2.5 seconds per stop, which is absolutely it's phenomenal. I mean, to get all those people working around the car and to get all four sets of all four tires changed in 2.5 seconds is it's quite something. And I believe the record now for the fastest pit stop is about 1.9 seconds, which is, I can't even comprehend that. I mean, that is just amazing. I feel like I'm really not doing them credit for, you know, I can't find the right word for it, but it really is something. But I've noticed with some of the McLaren stops, they seem to be, you know, 3.5 seconds in their pit stops. So, they, you know, I think they'll get it right. I mean, they seem, and I've been talking about them rather positively now for a good number of months. And I think that's well deserved for them after being literally in the wilderness and down at the bottom of the heap for so many seasons. fans that that 2019 has been a year forward for them in so many years. I mean, the car is better. They've had better results on the track. Both Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris have done very, very well. I mean, I've been impressed by Lando Norris. I know he's further down in the World Championship and hasn't scored quite as many points as Carlos Sainz, but Sainz has had the benefit of being in Formula One a little bit longer than Lando. But I think together they've done a very, very good job, and I think for once that things are really been going in the right direction. I mean, it couldn't have gotten much worse as it was a couple of years ago when they were there with Honda. Last year, I think, was a bit of a transition year, but this year the changes have been quite noticeable. I mean, they've been more regular in the later qualifying rounds. They've been there in the points more regularly. They've had multiple double point finishes, and of course, off the track, they've appointed a number of key people in key positions and are continuing to do so. And I think that slowly but surely we're seeing McLaren really starting to rise out of the ashes, and it's going to be a long process, obviously, and they've really fallen a long way behind a lot of the other top teams in Formula One. And I keep asking myself, where is a realistic place for them to come back to? I really would like to see it, and this is probably more from a sentimental point of view, from when they were so good over the past decade, going back into the 90s, obviously into the 80s. And I mean, they're a wonderful team with a very rich history, and it's a team that that knows how to win, and they've won many world championships, both in the drivers and the constructors. But I don't know. It just it seems that Formula One, for obvious reasons, has changed a lot in recent times, and well, who knows if this this cost cap that they're going to bring in will make a difference and create more parity and level the playing field. But I don't know if they will be able to get back and beat Ferrari or beat Mercedes at their own game. I think that they can get closer to them. I think that they might become kind of like a Red Bull team, maybe not quite. Yeah, you know, I don't think they can get quite to that level, but who knows? Who really knows where the limit is? And they will be going back to Mercedes engines. I mean, they're not going to be sticking with Renault for very much longer, so. The thing is, they did, I think, after being in denial for a while, actually come out and admit that even though that the Honda engines were bad, that even though they'd been blowing their own trumpet for quite a while and saying that even though that the engine was bad, there was nothing wrong with their chassis was one of the best ones in Formula One, and then they had to eat a little bit of humble pie and then came back and said that that the chassis wasn't all that great either. But this year, I think that they have a strong case to make for themselves, and that the car is better. Obviously, that they've been able to do more with their car than the Renault Works team, even though they've done a little bit more positive things. Especially, I think Ricciardo had a good result this past weekend, which is a bright spot in what's been an otherwise bit of a gloomy year and disappointing year for Danny Ricciardo. But McLaren themselves, I don't know. I still think they have a long, long way to go. I think they can improve upon the amount of points that they had in the World Championship this year. It'll just be interesting to see next year. Are they going to be able to maintain this forward progress? Will they be able to keep it going? Or are they going to regress a little bit and go backwards? But I like what I've seen from them throughout the year, and I just really hope that they can keep it moving forward. Anyways, just a little bit more now, just a couple more things to go over, and Alfa's confirmed that Antonio Giovinazzi will be there again next year in 2020, and he'll stay alongside Kimi Raikkonen. And Alfa's been a disappointment for me this year. I mean, they're just... they're down there in the Constructors' Championship, and maybe my expectations were a little bit colored and a little bit biased. I think after they had a promising year last year when it was Sauber Alfa Romeo Racing, but I keep thinking, back to 2018, how much of it was the car and how much of it was Charles Leclerc? And I mean, I think that a lot of it was Charles Leclerc. I mean, Marcus Ericsson, he's a decent driver. I mean, I don't think he's one of the guys that was ever going to get a top drive with one of the big teams. But I mean, definitely good enough to be in Formula One. But just the difference between himself and Charles Leclerc. there last year was what was really, really apparent, and Charles finished much better. And I thought it was interesting how he was able to progress and qualify better and do better in the races in a car that was obviously not the greatest. But when you're looking at a guy that doesn't have one of the best cars on the grid, then it's not so much, well, how does the Alfa compare to, say, the Mercedes? And obviously the answer to that one is not as good as the Mercedes. And obviously that's going to be a big gap between the two of them. But when it's that sort of a situation, when you know that it's not one of the greatest cars, it's then, well, how does he compare to his teammate? And he was much, much better. And even this year, we've seen it with Charles at Ferrari, that he's out-qualified Vettel and won a number of races, and there you go. But anyways, I think that Giovinazzi, I think that's a good choice for Alfa Romeo, but I really hope that they're able to move forward and do something a little bit better, because they've been, like I say, I think they've been disappointing this year. I think they're never going to be a contender in Formula One, but I would have thought that that they would have been able to pull themselves up a little bit higher up in the world championship than they have been. Anyways, now closing it out, Formula One said that they could abandon Pirelli's 2020 tires, and drivers were very, very critical of the Pirellis after tests at the U.S. Grand Prix practice session. So all the drivers were given two sets of the 2020 spec tires at the practice session on Friday, and most of the drivers reported an unexpected lack of grip. And I mean, there's a bit of a I guess a disclaimer there, and there were colder conditions, and the track was green, and they were wondering whether or not the tires would be an improvement, as they discussed with Chase Carey before the qualifying on Saturday. And they were unanimous that the data from the Friday running should be studied further, and if the results are not positive regarding that 2020 spec rubber, then they're saying that they should make an early decision to stick with the 2019 compounds, which they say are proven at this point. So interesting to see. I don't know. I thought about it. Would we like to see a return to the era of Formula One? We had different tire manufacturers out there and competing. You have, say, one team is running Pirellis, the other one Goodyears or Firestones or Michelins, whatever it might be. I don't know. I think that I kind of like the idea of kind of standardizing things like tires, keeping everybody on the same ones, and then it kind of it takes one variable out of the equation. I mean, you remember that one year when we only had a couple of teams start the U.S. Grand Prix when it was running at Indy because of the problems that they had the rubber there. That just was a bad look for Formula One, and I know that we just had to do with like a lot of the load coming into that that final corner, because you had like that infield section of the track, and they ran on a portion of the oval at Indy. But yeah, I don't know. Anyways, if they decide not to go with the 2020 spec rubber, then much like the people in Formula One, I'd hope to see that a decision is made sooner rather than later. Anyways, that's a good place to wrap up the show this week. Thank you again so much for your support and downloading and listening to the show. If you have any questions or comments or feedback, I'd love to hear them. You can send them my way either on Twitter at ScuderiaF1Pod or email me at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. And that's a wrap. We'll be back again this time next week to talk about the Brazilian Grand Prix. And I still don't like the idea that by the time the end of this month comes and rolls around and we go into December and we get past Thanksgiving and all that, that Formula One's going to be done for 2019. And I know I'm being purely selfish, but it is what it is. Anyways, that's it for me again. Thank you for listening. I'm done. That's a wrap. I'm out of here. Thanks very much. Talk to you guys again this time next week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.